Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
All right, let's talk about things much more serious. Unfortunately, we do need to have these types of conversation. Professor Joansi van Wyk, good morning. Can you hear us?
Yes, good morning.
How are you this morning?
I'm fine, thank you. I hope you too.
I am, but before we get going on some of the less serious conversations, what is important to know on International Waffle Day is what is your waffle topping of choice?
Well, maple syrup and ice cream.
All right, you've gone the classic route, eh? A classic. Go on the classic route, and I think that does make sense. So, Professor Joansi van Wyk, sorry, to put you on the spot, make you think about waffles, and I know what's going to happen after this is you're going to go and get a waffle, but
yes.
That is what happens. Right, let's talk about what is happening in Europe and the horror of what is going on in Ukraine. Watching the images, the footage, it is absolutely devastating to see. That said, does this war have the characteristics of war criminality, of war crimes, and how do we know if it does or doesn't?
Yes, it's of course quite a mind shift from waffles to war.
Mm-hmm.
A war crime is described. There are almost 50 elements that the international law describes as elements of war crimes. So we find that typically in the Geneva Conventions of 1949, 1977, and more recently in the International Criminal Court's statute, the Rome Statute, that entered into force in 2002. So as much as we think that war does not have any laws or that it is ultimate chaos, there are international rules according to which it must be played. Typically, that is, you do not attack civilians. You do not prevent civilians from leaving. It is typically a military force that must fight a military force. So, also the conscription of children, for example, is a war crime. The destruction of civilian infrastructure constitutes a war crime. Enslavement or hostage taking, all of that forms part of that. But what we've seen since the end of the Second World War is that the criminal responsibility and culpability has shifted from states to individuals. So whereas states have typically been found guilty and accused of war crimes, the shift has been to individuals. And almost similar to individual criminal responsibility at a national level, but now also at an international level, due to the nature of war, either an international war between two states or more states, or then within the acceptable human rights laws. In other words, crimes against humanity, that is typically a crime against us as humans, that goes beyond common, simple human dignity.
It's a fascinating thing that it's become, and I guess it should be, individuals held liable, because otherwise you can really hide behind government, parliament, your state. There's so many ways to obscure yourself within that realm.
Absolutely, and that was, as you may recall, what happened at the Nuremberg and Tokyo trials after the Second World War, where so many of the Germans and Japanese that were put on trial simply said, but I was given orders, I followed orders, due to the very nature of a military setup. It's a hierarchical command structure where you have to follow orders. You cannot simply act on your own. So for that purpose, defense forces and armies had to change their mindset that you can resist an order or a command that contravenes any of these major crimes. Now, this is very tricky.
Of course.
Because of issues of treason, because of killing that can take place within your own army, and it takes a very strong soldier to say, I will not do that. And treason is then obviously committed, and that is in itself killing somebody for laying down arms is of course also a war crime. So we have seen that in the past, but ultimately that is what the trend and the development has been in the international community, is that all of us should be having an awareness of what constitutes a crime, what is human dignity, what is the value of life. And that has come out from the International Convention on Human Rights, for example, so that there should be a greater awareness of individual rights rather than just state rights.
Mm. And what we're seeing happening in Ukraine at the moment, on the face of it, and obviously we can't know for absolute certain,
yeah,
but on the face of it, what does it appear to be?
Yes, what we already see is a number of investigations that have been opened up.
Right.
We know that this is basically the first social media war on the grand scale that we see. We see teenagers posting on social media, TikToks, videos going around, people of all ages going to the social media. And so we see a war that is open in a way we are voyeurs to other people suffering.
Mm-hmm.
So there seems to be evidence that come out that this is indeed taking place in the context and in contravention of the International Criminal Court and the statute thereof. But we also see evidence collected by the International Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies, Human Rights Watch. We see that some states have gathered evidence. Ukrainian government, for example, have also started to collect evidence. The International Court of Justice has also opened a case, for example. So if one reads the ICC statute, the criminal court statute, one can see that there are a distinction between what is a war crime, a crime of aggression, crime of genocide, and a crime against humanity. Now, interesting, at the UN, the past week and the past month, basically, we've seen a focus on aggression. And of course, a crime of aggression is part of this bigger war crime debate. But I think the next step will be at the UN is to make a distinction between a crime of aggression and go after Putin and Russia as perpetrators of war crimes. So just to give you an idea, a crime of aggression where we are right now, as much as it is also a war crime, it has a different definition to that of a war crime, which is typically then the organization of a crime, a breach of the Geneva Conventions, going after civilian targets. I mean, we've seen pictures of maternity wards, hospitals, theaters, schools being bombed, and even prisoners of war reports of that, of ill treatment. And all of that is typically under the war crimes definition. But I have an idea that the international community, should Putin persist with the war in Ukraine, that these crimes of aggression, of genocide, and of war crimes will then become more and more the focus to make a case for the indictment of Putin and his close associates and then individuals within the Russian military.
Professor Joanne C. van Wyk, Professor of International Politics at the University of South Africa, giving us perspective around the war in Ukraine and the possibility of Putin being charged with war crimes. It's 7:01. I'm Howard Feldman. Good morning.